Hey guys, I'm Eric McLean.
And I'm Kelly Gramlich. It's time to talk some ACC sports.
Let's go!
Happy Monday, everyone, and welcome in to Gramlich and McLean. Happy Christmas week. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to everyone out there. We'll probably say this a few more times because Mac is an actual Buddy the Elf, and I'm a big Christmas fan as well. So Merry Christmas to all of our listeners out there. And of course, we had an epic ACC championship game this past weekend. Clemson 34, Notre Dame 10. Tigers win their sixth straight ACC title. EMAC, we got to break it all down.
Yeah, we absolutely do. But first, I want to tell you guys about our great friends over at Sunshine. Look, we're all busy, especially in this holiday season right now. We're on the go. You want an easy, delicious boost. How are you going to find it? Sunshine. You don't want to overload on caffeine. Sunshine has the delicious energy beverage that you want. Plus, they have all those essential electrolytes, minerals, and vitamins to keep you feeling your best. And only 70 milligrams of caffeine, guys. And that's no more caffeine than a cup of coffee. So forget the boost crash cycle. You want that feel good energy. Get Sunshine today at your local Publix, or even better, go online at drinkthesunshine.com and use our code ACC10 at checkout. We'll save you guys 10%. That's drinkthesunshine.com. Kelly, let's break this game down. It was nuts. And really, it started off a little bit slow for both teams. You know, Notre Dame goes up the field, marches right down there, stalls out, gets a field goal. Clemson has a huge turnover. Notre Dame able to capitalize. So we think gets down the field and misses a field goal. So really what could have been, you know, 10-0, probably should have been 10-0, was only 3. And then that was about it for Notre Dame for most of the game.
It was Notre Dame definitely struggled because of their start. I think if they get a touchdown on that second field goal drive, things may be a little different. And Clemson didn't start as quickly with the Trevor Lawrence interception. But let's start with Trevor Lawrence, 25 of 36 for 322, two touchdowns and a pick, 10, or not 10 carries, that's ETN numbers, 10 carries for 90 yards and a rushing touchdown. ETN had 124 yards rushing. But What was Trevor able to do, Mac? We talked about Trevor and his running ability and how it was going to open up things for ETN. It almost looked prophetic. I mean, that's exactly what happened. So what did you see? What was the difference with Trevor Lawrence on the field?
Yeah, thank goodness those guys listening to the podcast and Coach Sweeney, you know, making us look like geniuses. He said, hey, look, this is what we're going to do. No, we just could see it. I mean, you could see it in the first game against Notre Dame and just, I don't want to call it lack of respect, but really not having to pay attention to or not really focus on the quarterback run. I mean, when you saw DJ run the game before, you could tell he was just banged up, very hesitant with when he was running the ball. Totally different story with number 16 there, the big giraffe gliding through.
Doesn't he look like a giraffe?
Every time I see him run, I go straight to Twitter and I look for a GIF or a picture posted by you, because I think that's one of the funniest things ever. But
I will bring you all the giraffe content you need, people. He looks like a giraffe.
Especially when running very fast.
Giraffes are fast.
They are. And that was a huge piece of this, Kelly. I mean, when you have that wrinkle, Jordan Cornett really said it best on the huddle after the game, that Notre Dame was almost preparing for a team that they hadn't seen. You know, when you talk about how impactful Trevor was, how impactful those three guys being back, and oh my goodness, did they deliver. But just keeping on the offensive side of the ball, Trevor was able to really just throw strikes, pick up huge plays, keep his eyes downfield. There were a couple of times where that pocket was just collapsing on him and he was holding the ball and then he just found somebody. So it was impressive to see that. There's honestly not a doubt in my mind that Trevor Lawrence is the best player in the country. He should be a Heisman finalist at bare minimum. I mean, you look at the game, the first game against Notre Dame, Clemson loses by 7. The next game against Notre Dame, they win by 24, a 31-point swing, Kelly. I just don't know if there's another player in the country that means that much to their team.
And, you know, part of that was the defense, of course, and we're going to get to the defense. I want to stick on the offensive side here, especially too with Notre Dame and what they can do moving forward. But I tweeted out that very rarely do we see a team with the Heisman candidate and then without. and see how they fare with and without them. And so I tweeted, you know, we have the proof of how valuable Trevor Lawrence is. And then some of those thumb gangsters came after me and were saying, well, you know, the defense really showed up for Clemson. Does Trevor play defense? And I get their point, but if you watched the game, like, I get it. If you just look at the stat sheet, like, I'm sorry Trevor didn't throw five touchdowns. This isn't the SEC. There's some defense being played.
Well, they called the dogs off too.
That's true. But you know this, Mac, and you can speak to this more. When you have Trevor and you can stay on the field and you're putting together long drives and your defense is not playing from behind and your offense is not giving up scoops and scores and giving up turnovers and things like that, there's a different element to this. And that's what Trevor Lawrence means to this team. So I get it. The defense looked a lot better. And we're going to talk about the defense. The defense looked great, let's be clear, for Clemson. But in your opinion, Mac, do you think Trevor Lawrence should win the Heisman Trophy?
Yeah. I mean, there really is no doubt about it for all those reasons you just spelled out, for what I spelled out, for just what he means to this team. And it was funny or interesting enough, after the game, you know, we had Matt Bockhorst come on, a guy that, you know, reminds me a lot of myself and the way he plays, the way he is with the media, very well-spoken young man. And you know, we asked him, is there a difference? EJ asked the question, is there a difference having QB1 back there? We know DJ's great, but is there another level that everyone around you kind of feels? And Matt said, you know, there is. You know, again, DJ did great in the moment, but there's another level of confidence that you get when you have Superman back there, when you have the best player in the country behind you. And that resonates through the entire team, from offense to defense to special teams, that you just, it's almost respectful arrogance, if you will. I don't want to say cockiness, that you can't lose when you have that guy on your team, when you have him on the field. And so, Kelly, I think for all of those reasons, obviously he's sidelined, you know, and out for 5 weeks because of this crazy time that we're dealing with. So if that didn't happen, I think it's clear cut. Because it happened, I still think his impact throughout college football, I mean, you're talking about the highest, best winning percentage of any player ever. I mean, this guy has lost one game. I know it's not a career award, but he has delivered for three straight years and has been the first, he's been the first round draft pick since he stepped onto campus. So I think that should tell you guys something. I think the NFL is okay at evaluating talent and who is the best overall prospect. With all those things in mind, I just don't know how he doesn't get the trophy.
And I do want to add this. I don't think Mac Jones or Devontae Smith or Kyle Trask are undeserving. I think those guys have had great years. You know, one way that we talk about the Heisman is, in order to build someone up, we always have to tear another player down. And that's not what either you or me have done with our arguments. You know, you don't have to tear down Devontae Smith or Mac Jones or Kyle Trask. Those guys have had great years. But there are so many reasons why you and I believe Trevor Lawrence should win the Heisman. And it is unfortunate, because of COVID, he missed two games. And of course, he doesn't play in a lot of fourth quarters and things like that. So the numbers aren't as gaudy. And I think we've been so spoiled lately because we've seen the crazy numbers. It's really been the Oklahoma quarterback effect with the insane numbers. And then, of course, Joe Burrow. But I don't think you have to throw 50 touchdowns to win the Heisman. And I don't think we should just automatically give it to the guy who throws 50 touchdowns every year.
Right. And you know, certainly when you just look at stats and you see, where does everybody rank up? You know, normally that's going to go to a quarterback. You know, it's just the guy that touches the ball every single play more often than not. So I think as Heisman voters are locked into this rut almost of stats, and only looking at a singular piece of it, you have to look at the overall impact. And so when you look at Mac Jones and you look at who does he have around him, unbelievable players. He's throwing the guys wide open. He has two other guys who could very easily be finalists for this award. You look at Trevor, he lost his top three wide receivers. He has four new starting offensive linemen. Mac Jones has an unbelievable senior or NFL bound next year or this year. Led offensive line. He has all of his top weapons. I know Waddle got hurt. But so when you look at that and you just say, if I put Mac in this situation, is he able to do the same things? And I think the answer is no. You look at Kyle Trask. What did Kyle Trask look like when Kyle Pitts wasn't on the field? Wasn't very good. So you have to say, who is the complete player? Who is the best player? And at the end of the day, I think you have a strong argument for Trevor. I think you have a strong argument for Devonta Smith. I don't really see it as much for those other two quarterbacks.
Well said, Mac. And before we get to Notre Dame offensively and what you saw, and a lot of that will lead into the Clemson defense discussion, because Clemson's defense really made Notre Dame struggle. There's no doubt. But what about Travis Etienne? Okay, 124 yards, 12.4 yards per carry, his best of the season in terms of efficiency. How great was Etienne? How was Trevor able to open things? And then specifically, did you see a better performance from the O-line as well for the Tigers?
You know, when we talked about it on Friday, Kelly, we said, what is Trevor, you know, going to do? Being back, what is Trevor going to do with alleviating stress? And we mentioned and we talked about how him running the ball is going to help Travis Etienne. Him running the ball is going to help his offensive line. And that's exactly what we saw. We saw a guy, an offensive line who just didn't have to block for one guy, and the defense could focus in and just really tee off like they did the first time these guys played. So with that, you see better double teams. You see linebackers not being able to just fly downhill and sit where they're, because they have to wait and see what Trevor's going to do. So now that offensive line can really get working to the next level. You don't have safeties like Kyle Hamilton screaming down into the box because they have to respect the pass over the top and the RPO. So all of those things, when you look at it, help the offensive line, help Travis Etienne. And I mean, what an amazing performance. I told you guys on the podcast Friday that I thought Travis was going to have around 150 yards. So we saw Travis Etienne have close to that. And again, he had 124 rushing, had about 30 receiving. So that's right there. And just, I thought that he would be able to do that. I thought that's what Clemson needed from him to really get to that level. And he delivered. I think he reminded everybody in the country that he is still that dude. You know, he's had such a strange year where it hasn't all been rushing, but it's still been very impactful, especially in the receiving game. This was kind of the game where he's like, all right, you probably forgot about me, but I'm still here. And I'm still one of, if not the best running back in the entire country.
Mac, let's talk about Clemson's defense here and what they did to Notre Dame. And really, you know, I think Clemson's defense forced Notre Dame into the kind of performance they had. Did you see anything specifically from the Irish that you weren't expecting to see, or places where they just didn't execute? For me, I just thought Clemson's defense did a great job of getting pressure on Book, keeping him in the pocket, not letting him scramble. I feel like that was mission number one for Clemson's defense, and that's exactly what they did.
Absolutely. And really, I think it's more about the Clemson defense than it is the Notre Dame offense and maybe lack there of production. I think that those guys just were playing at an unbelievable level. That's what we expected. That's what we talked about on the show Friday, that it's not the JV defense anymore. I mean, this is the varsity, and you're playing against a bunch of dudes. Not a bunch of rookies. You know, you're playing a bunch of seniors, guys who have been there, done that, that are ball players. And so those guys obviously played out of their minds. I thought the defensive line did a really good job of getting pushed backwards and recreating that line of scrimmage, holding on to their blocks and not necessarily just shooting through gaps to shoot through gaps and really being patient and just sitting there and waiting for Ian almost to make a decision. Because the secondary, a lot of these sacks were key to the secondary, and the secondary just nobody being open. And so those guys were really able to get back there. Kelly mentioned it. Clemson had six sacks. They should have had nine, but Ian Book is that elusive and that creative with his feet. He was able to escape a couple of times, but I mean, they got after him. And whether it was with linebackers, with safeties, with corners, Darian Kendrick even got back there and got involved in the tackles for loss sacks category. So was very impressed from the entire defensive performance. I think if there's anything to pick on, Kelly, it was the coverage of tight ends. And I think that's a little bit, it's kind of, you know, Clemson's Achilles heel. You look at some of their big time losses. My senior year, I'm having PTSD right now, thinking about Clemson not being able to cover O.J. Howard for 10 million yards and 60 touchdowns in one game. You think of Pittsburgh in 2016, where the little shovel pass, tight ends, block, and they're out, nobody covering them. With Notre Dame, it was more so just really big athletes running in space and either people forgetting about them or them making really big catches. So when you look at Ohio State and you look forward to, will that be a problem? And even Alabama, this year, it really isn't. You know, you look at the tight ends that they have, not as productive as maybe you're used to seeing. Sure, they probably have some 4 or 5 star at the position. But when you look at the receptions, when you look at their offense, there's not a big role for those guys. So is it something those coaches can look at and take advantage of? Surely they can. But at the end of the day, you know, Notre Dame probably has the best tight end core in the country. And those guys, you know, probably able to do a little bit better than, you know, your guys are able to do.
We talked about that on the Homer pod. Our dear Homer friends, Jess and JC, were big on the tight ends. And
has anybody checked in on Jess or Gordon? Are they doing okay?
Mac, honestly, I had the thought when the game was over, I thought, okay, I'm going to tweet at JC and Jess. And then I thought, I just don't know. Jess was tweeting something. She was quite upset. JC just went like, I don't even think I saw him on Twitter. I just felt it wasn't the time. You know, I just felt like I needed to be nice.
Yes, we kill people with kindness. We invite them on the pod. We treat them as great guests. If you want to speak recklessly and be held accountable, you know, we've got the tapes. We've got the clips. We'll roll them back, I'm sure. But no, we're appreciative of those guys. And, you know, maybe there's a round three. We'll do the Homer pod even bigger. We might get 3-3 on this thing. Who knows?
We'll see if they come back. We gotta make some Alabama friends, or really we need to make some Ohio State friends.
Right, first. Yeah, come on, Kelly. Don't get too far ahead of yourself.
Sorry. Excuse me. My apologies there. Okay. Before we get into kind of the bigger picture, and we're going to talk playoff, and we're going to give you something to know about each of these ACC bowl games, I think this is a tough question because Clemson held Notre Dame to 44 yards rushing. That was the key. Shutting down Ian Book and Kyren Williams. People talked about Skalski, and Skalski looked like a madman.
He was fired up. And it was funny. I heard him say after the game, whether I can't remember if this was, you know, to somebody or if a teammate or coach said it, but he was upset about all the talk, you know, leading into that week and people kind of discounting the defense's importance. And not that it was all about Trevor, but just people not mentioning the fact that Clemson had three people out and the fact that he, a huge piece of it, was not there. So I think he took it really personal and, you know, just wanted to, you know, kindly introduce himself to that Notre Dame football team.
Yes, kindly. And he's just so shy, you know, Skalski, such a shy guy. But my question is with the way Clemson shut down the run, because another guy we don't talk about enough, and you've been very high on him and I have too, Tyler Davis in the middle. So which player was more important? If you had to choose one, which player was more important to Clemson's defense looking like they did on Saturday? And if you don't say Skalski, he's probably going to come beat you up.
Right, right. It's hard to tell, right? Because the defensive line of scrimmage was such a big deal, you know, the game before that I'm not sure if, you know, a smaller guy, a less experienced, you know, not as powerful, not Tyler Davis really at the end of the day, if he's not in there and if he's not holding on to those double teams, those two offensive linemen where they can now get upfield and get to Skalski, I'm not sure if Skalski has the same type of game. Now, listen, he's one of the best linebackers in the country. It stinks that he was banged up, injured, and probably isn't going to get the recognition that he deserves when you talk about all ACC teams or any other awards. But he is that dude, and he is a thumper, a very smart player, good in coverage, you know, better than your average, just knock you in the hole linebacker. So it's hard to say, Kelly. I think I have to give the nod, you know, to Tyler Davis just because of how he can do a lot of things, and he can take up so much space and really just be a guy that takes on double teams and frees everybody else up. So I'm going with the unpopular pick. I'm going with the Christmas tree, not all the ornaments on the Christmas tree. I'm going with Tyler Davis.
I like that analogy. I would say Tyler Davis more from an X's and O's standpoint, but maybe Skalski more from a leadership quarterback of the defense and just getting everyone fired up.
And Kelly, you know who actually had a huge day? And it was probably a combination of all these things and you know, having his bruiser brother out there was Baylen Specter. I mean, he played like a man on fire. He was coming through the hole extremely hard. All that, you know, Kyren Williams pass blocking talk that we had game one, they put that to bed quick and blew him up time and time again. And those two guys, when they're healthy, they're one of the better duos of linebackers in the country. And Trent Simpson, another guy who is going to be a bona fide superstar. If y'all don't know who that is, number 22 for Clemson. He is Isaiah Simmons, but more of a linebacker, more of a pass rusher. And if you can imagine that, it's pretty scary. So this Clemson defense, very young. It's petrifying to think what they're going to look like next year. I'm saying a little prayer for everybody who goes against them for the remaining 2-3 years that they're still here.
T's and P's. T's and P's. Okay, let's get to the bigger picture in college football. But that was our Sunshine Beverages big game review. Enjoy a can of sunshine and have all the natural feel-good energy you need. Look, the holidays are coming this week. Your in-laws are coming over. You need a little pick-me-up, all right? And that has nothing to do with my in-laws. My in-laws are amazing. But I'm talking about everyone else's.
I am so thankful for my in-laws.
Yes.
You know, the help, the love, the support. And I know you're the exact same way. So not to say that there's anything wrong with anybody's relationship with their in-laws, but I am very thankful and blessed to have some awesome in-laws.
Me too. We have great in-laws. But if you maybe don't, a can of sunshine. Remember, they're available at Publix and online at drinkthesunshine.com. I actually saw a big display at QT the other day too. So go check them out at QT. Okay, Mac, the college football playoff is set. Number one, Alabama. Number two, Clemson. Number three, Ohio State. Number four, Notre Dame. Right on the outside looking in, number five, Texas A&M. And number six, Oklahoma. The question that everyone is wondering, Mac, should Notre Dame have gotten in the playoff?
And Kelly, I say this with 100% confidence, whether they were in the ACC, out of the ACC. If they're out of the ACC, they would have been in for sure, which is kind of funny. But I say yes. I mean, their resume is so strong. You look at two of the best wins in the entire country. You've got number one Notre Dame or Clemson. You've got a ranked team in UNC who is one of the most explosive offenses in the country. They shut it down. They shut them all the way down in the second half. Was very impressed with what I saw from them. Did they have a little slip up? Sure. Yeah, they did. But again, it was against what I think is the best team in the country in healthy Clemson. It's funny how different Clemsons we've had this year. We have kind of phase one, and then we have angry Clemson, and now we have healthy Clemson. I think healthy Clemson's the most dangerous. So you see, outside of that, Notre Dame is a very good football team. I think there's no doubt in my mind they're the number four team in the country. And honestly, what's the debate? Who's the debate for? Texas A&M?
I guess A&M.
Who got blipped by 30. I mean, it's just right. Pick your poison of who got blown out worse and what do we want to see again? Were we going to have Texas A&M at number four and see Alabama blip them by 40? In the playoffs. So I just don't know. The same thing surely could happen, you know, to Notre Dame, and all Notre Dame fans are probably maybe not trembling, but they're remembering 2012 pretty strongly right now. And, you know, whether it's going to be a revenge type game where they can really get back in it. But again, I think this is the right thing. I think number four should have been Notre Dame, and the committee, even though I don't really want to say this because we're not on great talking terms right now, I think they got it right.
Neither of us are really on good terms with the committee, but the bottom line, their job is to get the top four. And I do think Notre Dame deserved to get in. If you look at Notre Dame and A&M, they both have one loss. They both were blown out by good teams. Now, Notre Dame blown out not as much, but it's kind of the same because Clemson could have kept going. They're both blown out, but Notre Dame has the better win. They do. And it's weird because they have a win over not healthy Clemson. I saw an A&M account tweeting, if Trevor Lawrence didn't get COVID, we would be in. Because then, theoretically, Clemson would have beaten Notre Dame on November 7th and in the ACC title game. So COVID strikes again, this time in College Station. I get, though, you know, I feel for A&M fans. I get that they're frustrated. Here's what I would say. And I saw Kellen Mond saying, well, it's the SEC. You know, we can't be expected to go blow everyone out. Well, A, Bama does. And B, you've got to at least look a little more impressive. Convince me a little more. Don't go beat Tennessee by 20. Beat them by 30. Like, do a little more here. Don't go beat Vanderbilt by 4. I think that's where A&M lost it, is in an era where we have humans making these decisions. You have to impress me more. And when you can't really control the game, when you get lucky in a win at Auburn because a ball goes through an Auburn's defender's hands, that's the issue. I think A&M really could have controlled their own destiny if they had looked more impressive.
I completely agree with you. And in this society, in this committee era that we're in the college football playoff, style points matter. They truly do. When you're talking about wins, when you're talking about trying to jump somebody else, if there's no head-to-head, if there's no common opponent, we have to look who's the better team based on what they were able to do. And that's why Notre Dame gets the nod. So I think, like I said, I think they got it right. I think, like you said, Texas A&M had all the opportunity in the world to jump that spot. But if you guys go back and if you listen to this podcast, maybe a month and a half ago, when these rankings came out, I said Texas A&M is a placeholder and will not move from 5 unless they lose. They have no chance to move forward. And that's exactly where we are today.
Mac told y'all people. See, if the Aggies only listened, and I can't say we don't have any Aggies listening, but I just don't know. I really have no idea. Okay, and here's my other theory, too, with Notre Dame and Alabama. I'm sure there was a debate. I'm sure it was a somewhat of a conversation, right, between A&M and Notre Dame. But I don't think the committee or, you know, whoever else was, I know the committee's the people that make the decisions, but it would be tough to resist Alabama, Notre Dame, because I really had thought when I saw that matchup come out, I thought surely they've played since 2012. They haven't. Bama and Notre Dame have only played 6 times in their history, and they're 2 very storied programs. And when you have a chance to have Bama, Notre Dame and have those kind of ratings, again, not saying it's rigged, but this is an excellent matchup. They haven't played since January 7th, 2013, which was the 2012 national title game. Bama won 42-14. So the storyline writes itself. Can Notre Dame exercise their demons? And you have arguably 2 of, if not the 2 biggest historical brands in the sport. I get why the committee couldn't resist.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I think if there was a way Texas A&M could have gotten in, I think they would have liked to have put them at 3.
And you can't put them over Ohio State, I don't think.
Not with how they played. And that's what I think you and I are alluding to, and not alluding to, we've said it. We flat out have said it. That they controlled their own destiny. They didn't take advantage of it. They didn't win with enough style points. And we all knew that. It's not a big secret. It's not like we just got to, you know, Selection Sunday and it's like, man, I wish we would have known we had to win by 30 instead of 15. You know, you knew that. Everybody knew that. You just don't have the ability. And that's why, you know, I'm really excited to see this Orange Bowl, Kelly, with North Carolina, number 13 versus number 5, Texas A&M, because I think Texas A&M's defense is for real. Their offense, I don't believe in it. So can they slow down North Carolina? And if they can't, can they keep up with them? Can they score with them? Just to let y'all know, the last time North Carolina was in Miami, they still are scoring touchdowns to this day.
To this day, yes, indeed. I'm glad you brought up these other bowls. I want to say very quickly, the spreads as of now, the early spreads on these championship games or the semifinal games, Alabama minus 19.5 versus Notre Dame. That's a lot of points. Would Bama have been that kind of favorite over A&M? Yes. So maybe more. And then Clemson minus 7.5 versus Ohio State. And of course, that's a rematch from last year. So that storyline writes itself as well. And we will have podcasts the week after Christmas breaking all these games down. We cannot wait to talk playoff and to talk these other ACC bowl games. I want to run through these, Mac, and just tell me your quick thoughts on these matchups in the ACC. We don't have as many bowl games. People are opting out, all these types of things.
I had some people asking me in Twitter and Instagram saying, you know, why aren't there more ACC teams? You know, we have good teams in this league. How is there a 2-win team going to, you know, some bowl game? It makes no sense. Well, guys, just to let you know, we had a lot of our teams opt out and they, you know, just felt like it was more meaningful. Their team wanted, a lot of it was player decisions, to not play in, you know, the Amarillo Bowl, the Idaho Potato Bowl. They wanted to go see their family. And so they opted out. So they chose not to. So when you think of Boston College, a great ACC team, Pitt, Virginia Tech, I think opted out, Virginia, all these different teams who would have been playing in bowl games, they said, nah, we're good. We'll start in the fall or the spring, whenever we can play again.
They said, thank you, next. We're out. Did you see Mike Bobo at South Carolina said, this is the SEC. You don't get a vote if you want to play or not. Did you see that?
I didn't, but, you know, it doesn't really surprise me, I guess.
I couldn't believe he said that in this day and age. Oh, man. Okay. Here's our four ACC bowl games. I really am excited for all four of these. These are great. The Orange Bowl, as we just mentioned, January 2nd, number 13, North Carolina versus number 5, Texas A&M. A&M has opened as a 6-point favorite. The Gator Bowl, also January 2nd, big bowl games there for North Carolina fans and North Carolina State fans. Number 23, NC State versus Kentucky. Kentucky's a 3-point favorite in that game. Oh, man. Hold on, Mac. We're going right to you on that. I just sounded like a TV producer. Duke's Mayo Bowl. That's what Mac and I hear all the time. Duke's Mayo Bowl, December 30th, Wake Forest versus Wisconsin. Wisconsin is 7-point favorite. And then the world's greatest bowl game. The Cheez-It Bowl, December 29th, number 18 Miami versus number 21 Oklahoma State. Cowboys are a 3-point favorite. Mac, what stands out?
You know, we touched on the Orange Bowl, so let's go straight to the Gator Bowl. I think it's interesting to see that number with Kentucky and NC State, an NC State team that has been disrespected by myself. I'm not sure about that. You know, I think that NC State is a team that is very resilient. Obviously, we're not sure if there are going to be any opt-outs, if all their entire team is going to play. You know, we are in this era, this time where people left and right are jumping out of bowl games. Will NC State's full team be available? If so, I think they're going to find a way to win. Of their 8 wins, none of them look the same. I think they do that again against Kentucky and find a way to pull it out. With the Duke Mayo Classic, Duke Mayo Bowl, Duke Mayo's everything.
Mac, I saw you got that Mayo gift pack.
I'm a Duke's Mayo King in Charlotte. So that's the way we roll. I'm excited for Wake Forest, who was actually scheduled to play in the Classic, is now playing in the bowl game. Seems like poetic justice. I'm excited Wake Forest, you know, quite honest, is getting back on the field. They wanted to play against Florida State for, you know, reasons outside of our control. That game didn't happen. So now Wake gets rewarded. They get to play Wisconsin. That is a very interesting game to me because Wisconsin had so much hype for half the year when they weren't playing and then half of their season when they were playing that they were going to be a playoff team. And the Big Ten, they were getting 2 teams for sure. Psych. So I'm excited to see this Wake Forest team. There's so many asterisks here. If everybody plays, if it's their full team, it'll be a fun, fun game. The last one, as you mentioned, the Cheez-It Bowl.
The Holy Grail.
This is where I'm a little bit concerned, Kelly, because you have a Miami team that expected to play in the Orange Bowl. I would honestly be shocked if we see superstars that are going to the NFL outside of De'Aaron King. I think he'll play. If we see superstars outside of him play, I will be shocked. And I'll go on TV and say that this podcast, I just think those guys are on to bigger and better things and are not going to be playing in the Cheez-It Bowl. I could be dead wrong, but I think we're going to see that game be very impacted by opt-outs. And then that number, I might be okay with it.
I agree with that. But look, I understand NFL is important and all these types of things, but a lifetime supply of Cheez-Its, I just don't understand.
Way better deal.
What could be better? So Cheez-It Bowl, step up, supply these guys with a lifetime supply of Cheez-Its, and they will play. Thank you. That's all I have to say to you. And I love you. You are my favorite bowl. My favorite thing ever, Mac, is when TCU hung a banner in their stadium and it said Cheez-It Bowl. And I just, it's these kind of things that make me so happy.
From that day, you were the biggest Cheez-It Bowl fan.
Cheez-Its and giraffes. The weight of my heart.
Now we know. Now we know how Nick, you know, put a ring on it. We absolutely know how that happened.
I am married. And Nick does know that I like Cheez-Its and giraffes.
That's right.
Mac, this was an awesome episode. I'm so glad we got to recap everything. We will be back. We're taking the rest of the week off, guys. So this is our episode for the week. Next week, after Christmas, we are coming at you hot with breakdown and analysis of all these games, of the semifinals, of everything. So you're not going to want to miss that. And I just want to say to our listeners, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Thank you so much for tuning in over the last 2+ months. Mac and I are both feeling very, very grateful these days. So thanks so much for listening, guys.
Guys, as Kelly said, thank you for listening. An awesome week. With a regular season, it's done. We're moving on to bowls. Can't wait to break all these down with you guys once Christmas is over. Thanks for listening again. If you haven't already, go over to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, drop us a little rating, a little review, And until next time, we'll see y'all.